I'm so thankful Tyler and Bob the last 2 weeks have preached on some omni-type messages. We're going to continue that actually today as well. So we're in this series, No One Like Our God. And when I go back to my absolute favorite activity that's non-sports, okay, I think my favorite activity I ever got to be a part of was Quiz Bowl. Has anyone ever done Quiz Bowl? Does that mean anything to anyone? No. You know it. Okay. Awesome. I've tried to get Nate to start one in his high school. So Quiz Bowl was this kind of thing where we would it's kind of like trivia. This was like our big Jeopardy moment in high school where you would get these teams of four. In my high school, we had two teams. We were so big. And we would go compete against these other schools. And we really had only one per year. And it was at this local college. And so we would compete. There might be 100-some schools there. And you line up against this other team, and y'all get a clicker, and it's trivia. I mean, they ask you questions on current events, on history, on math problems, and I mean, just anything and everything. And it was absolutely so much fun, and it was packed. The rooms would be packed, because if you weren't competing that round, you'd go watch somebody else, hoping they said something really silly, which always happened. I had, the sad thing is my sister was on the other team, and she, like, still reminds me of really, really embarrassing answers that I gave that were so wrong, that you're hoping, like, when you're watching, you're hoping somebody gives these answers. That was me. So anyway, it was such a thrill doing Quiz Bowl because you wanted to prove that you knew more than your other opponents, right? Or you wanted to prove that my school is actually a better school than your school. You know, my class of 23, right, we're actually better than you probably have a class of 30 over there or something. You know, these are all small schools. And so there was so much pride in being smart and having knowledge, which is interesting because age doesn't really lessen the competitive drive of having knowledge. It just doesn't. Like, as you get older, you still want to know more things. Like, we all do. There's a reason trivia nights happen all the time. If you ever want to entertain me, just invite me to a trivia night. I don't even know the answers. I just like to read the cards, and like I'm always interested in what's going on. Game shows. Some of the game shows, it's actually knowledge based, right? And like this is such a competitive deal. Political conversations, right? You ever been in a political argument? I guarantee you, everyone who's ever been in a political argument is correct. You just ask them, right? He's like, I'm right, you're wrong. And it's just like these things, like because we know something, we know that we know that we know something, right? And we just inflate because we're excited about knowledge. We hear quotes like, knowledge is power. And we take that literally, and it's like, if I know more, I have more power, and I'll be better off in life. And so, of course, knowledge is a really good thing. And so what we're going to do today is come, and we're going to talk about knowledge. But in this series, it's kind of flipped upside down because, you know, so oftentimes and much of the Christian life is we see what Christ has done for us, and we want to be like Jesus. So we want our lives to look a lot like Jesus, and we imitate Jesus. But there are certain ways that we cannot, and we're not even supposed to, be like God in. There are certain attributes that belong to Him alone. Therefore, there's no one like our God. 2 weeks ago, Tyler taught on omnipotence, that God is all-powerful. And last week, Bob preached on omnipresence, that He's present in more than just one place, like you and me. We're not capable of either of those two things. And today, the topic is omniscience. Omni meaning all, and so all-knowing. God is omniscient. He's all-knowing. He knows everything. That's what we're going to talk about today. We are not omniscient. Okay, I want you to think for a moment. Think about the smartest person. person you've ever known in your entire life. Okay? I'll give you a moment. Think about the absolute smartest person you've ever come across. And I promise you, it's not you. So get over yourself. Not to cut anyone down, but move past yourself to somebody else who's the smartest person you've ever met, okay? And I'm going to tell you about mine. His name is Jeremy. Jeremy is absolutely the smartest person I've ever come across. Jeremy, my sophomore year of college, I became an RA, which just means I can charge you your dorm floor. And so I went from an all-guys dorm my freshman year with 150 on my floor, all guys, to this honors dorm where there's like, I'm responsible for like 60 guys. And it was amazing. It was the easiest assignment you could ever have as an RA because their wild nights, all they did was play computer games through the night. Like, honestly. What RA has ever told their floor, guys, get a life. Go do something, anything. That was me, honestly. Like, it was so crazy. And so Jeremy was a senior, so I had him for 1 year as his RA. And turns out Jeremy's pretty smart. He graduated in 4 years. He had his 4.0. That's great. Some people do that, not very many. Jeremy had 7 majors in 4 years. On top of that, I can name 5 of them. I forgot the last two, but listen to this. Math was one of his majors. Chemistry, physics, history, anthropology. Those were 5 of the 7. I don't remember the others. And so there's this limit for students. The max at the university you could take was 18 credit hours in a semester. That's a lot. 15 was kind of my thing. Like that's what most people took. Probably 12 to 15. He took 18. He didn't actually. He had an override from the chancellor that he could take as many as he wanted. And I'm not making this up. His last semester to graduate with a 4.0 in 4 years with 7 majors, he took 36 credit hours in that single semester. He took double what the next highest achiever at this entire university would took. And I never had a class with Jeremy, but those who did said he went into the front row, he literally sat like this in the center of the front row and paid attention. Like he didn't take notes. How do you major in math and chemistry and not take notes, you know? But this guy was brilliant. Ends up getting a Rhodes Scholarship. About a year after this, I got to study abroad. I'm in Oxford, England, and I meet a number of his Rhodes Scholar, like his cohort, and I'm talking to them, and they're like, you know, here's the reality. And these are just, like, there's, what, 20 American? I don't know how, it's not a lot of Rhodes Scholars. And they said, look, we all have that thing that got us this. Like everybody, yeah, you have to have your GPA, your test scores, all that stuff, but there's something else that got us this. And they all said, like, well, the 5 of them I was probably talking to, they said, Jeremy, though, he's, like, way above us. Like, the Rhodes Scholars were saying, Jeremy's at a different level than the rest of us. Jeremy is absolutely the smartest person I've ever been around. The only thing he couldn't do well was remember to turn his alarm clock off, and I always had to key in and do that for him. That's back before, you know, you had your phones to do that. Why do I bring up Jeremy? This is what's fascinating. As smart as Jeremy is, college professor today, once upon a time, when Jeremy was born, he started it this low. He started at 0. He didn't know anything. And there's some, like, we understand that there's some cognitive ability in the womb. That's why, you know, moms and dads read to their child in their womb, and they start to hear their voice, and the voices become familiar. But when you're born, you start with knowledge. You start at ground zero. You have to learn everything. You have no knowledge whatsoever. And that's kind of the fact is we have to learn. Some things are taught, right? They're books that we can read. Some things are caught. They're experiences we have. But regardless, throughout our entire lives, we learn. But we've all started at zero, at nothing, and we've started to learn, right? We've started to become smarter. In fact, how many times have you ever said, like, wow, you learn something every day, right? And we say that as like a figure of speech, but we do. We learn something every day. And we're never supposed to exhaust that. Mark Twain famously said, when I was 14, my dad was so ignorant, I couldn't stand to be around the old man. But by the time I was 21, I realized he learned a lot in those 7 years, right? And it's that whole idea that, like, we do grow, we do, and hopefully as we grow in knowledge, we're growing in maturity. It's not good when one offsets the other, like they should kind of come up together. But this is absolutely part of life. But we humanity, we start at zero. Something else, we never learn it all. When it comes to knowledge, we never learn it all. If you ever called somebody a know-it-all, or worse, if somebody ever called you a know-it-all, don't take it too personally, you're not. Nobody is. You can't be. Just think about this for a sec. Past, present, future, okay? If we encompass time, it's impossible for you, for anyone, to know all of the past, right? People, specialists who study, you know, their field of history, like, there are massive gaps they don't know. It's just not for us to know. So certainly anyone else, like, we can't know all of history. The present, we don't know what's going on in the present. You might have an idea of what's going on in the Ukraine right now, maybe in Myanmar. Do you know what's going on in Sri Lanka? Jillie was in here. Her favorite country is Djibouti. No, we don't. And especially in the hearts and minds of every single individual, like, we don't know what's going on in the present. We're actually pretty good. We have an idea of the future, but we only moderately know the future. How many of you trust the weather forecast? You know, that's like one of the most accurate future projections there is, and it's not always that accurate. And so it's like we can never know it all, flat out. Sometimes we learn wrong information. Sometimes as we're attaining knowledge, we get it wrong. One of my quiz bowl answers was, I don't know what the question was. My sister might. But it was some influential lady. It was probably like Susan B. Anthony was the answer. And I somebody who was deceased, and my answer was Jane Fonda. Turns out Jane Fonda was still alive, and 20-some years later, she's still alive. I was so wrong. But I was certain as I buzzed in, I knew my answer. And, like, have you ever argued with somebody? And as you're arguing, or maybe it's after you're arguing, but, like, you're arguing and you realize, uh-oh, I'm on the wrong side. I actually am wrong. You are right. Like, but you don't want to actually say it quite like that, right? Have you ever just, like, been so certain of something and then realize, nope, I guess I'm wrong? There's... Not to bring up anything I really don't want to bring up, but there's a lot of fake news out there today. And not just out there, it's all over the place. And it's not one-sided fake news. Like, there's just misinformation all over. One of the great advantages of the internet is that we have what we call unlimited knowledge on demand, right? It's not unlimited. We might call it unlimited. It's actually quite limited, even though it's very expansive. But you know, one of the disadvantages of it is that we can get completely misled. We can even be manipulated. We can see things and people are behind, like, doing things that we just don't know, intentions, and there's all kinds of misinformation on any issue, on any side of any issue. There just is. It's just our reality. And some of our wrong information, the information that we have, like, it's because that we're misled. Like, our knowledge is on something is influenced by the person who gave it to us. A That's just reality. Oftentimes, speaking of humanity and knowledge, oftentimes we even forget knowledge that we once had. I can't tell you how many times, I guess I'm getting old, that's it. I sit here and I'm in the middle of something and I'm like, I'm trying to have a conversation with somebody and I'm like so distracted by trying to remember a detail that I'm trying to share in the conversation. I'm like, what was that person's name? Or where was that, who was I talking to when it's so often like I knew something before and I don't know it right now. And maybe I'll never know it again, I don't know. But so oftentimes we forget things that we might have even worked really, really hard to know. How many of you took Calc 3 in college and remember any of it today? I don't. I don't want to. That was brutal. We don't. And this is the thing, our memories are only as good as the last update that we've had to our memories. This is fascinating, but when you ever notice like two people could have a shared experience and yet they recall that shared experience complete, like details are vastly different, even though they were both there, they were both present, they both absolutely confident they have it right. But do you know that our minds and our memories are kind of like an autosave on a computer program? Like every time you revisit it, there's a likely chance on a memory that one little detail flips. And when that happens, even though you're so certain of it, that's what gets saved. And so the next time you go back to that memory, something new might be shifted, and that's how it saves. And so no wonder we have these, I'm done with that mic. Okay, so for Christmas, I want a new mic. There it is, oh, there's my idea. So. But impactful moments that we've had in our lives become cloudy. Sometimes they disappear altogether. Really important people that have influenced our lives in most significant ways, we just forget. We move on. They don't become, continue being part of our lives, and they just go out of our memories. So yeah, we forget knowledge that we once had. Additionally, we struggle to accept our limits when it comes to knowledge. It's so hard for us to say those three little words, I don't know. It's hard for some of us, it's hard to use an instruction manual. Some of us maybe walk around Home Depot way longer than we should before we ask for help. Like, why? It's like, I just expect more. I don't want to accept a limit. We have this innate desire that's inside of us that says, I should know everything there is to know. But here's the thing. We're not designed that way. Only God is. God. Omniscient. He's all-knowing. He knows all things. He knows everything. What does that even mean if God is omniscient? It literally means he knows everything. He knows answers to science questions that we haven't even thought, that the best of the best on earth haven't ever thought to even ask. Like he knows those details, but it's so much bigger than that. He knows the soul. I mean, he knows your intentions. He knows your feelings. He knows your emotions. He knows your secrets. Like this stuff is real. Every month I get a text, only because I haven't stopped it yet. Sherwin-Williams, the paint company, sends me their, promo thing or whatever. This week I got a text, and I actually opened it because it looked really cool. And they were highlighting their color of the month, color of the year, I don't know. It was called Copen Blue, and it's gorgeous. And I looked at it, and I paused and looked at it. And you know what? Copen Blue is gorgeous, except it's probably just some cheap, like, castaway something. It's a it's an imposter of something God's already got in heaven. Like, he already knows, like, the best things that we come up with and we're so excited about, they're not new to God. Like, he, and all things, colors, feelings, knowledge, academia, it doesn't matter. When God is omniscient, he's all knowing. Isn't this something about God's love, though? He's all knowing about each of us. And he's never shaken. He's never lost his love for you. Like, his love is not dependent on how you're doing. His love is dependent on his character, which is so incredible. Psalm 139 is an incredible psalm. The way it starts, I want to share this with you. The psalmist, this is so much about just God's love for human life. And the first six verses, "Oh Lord, you've searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar." So he's saying, God, you know what I'm doing physically, but you know my thoughts. Like, you know inside of me. "You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word's on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me." It's high. I cannot attain it. And this is the psalmist saying, God, all of your knowledge, your omniscience, it's too high for mere man. Like, we can't handle what you have, and we're not intended to. God is God. We're not, but we are the object of his love. So I want to go through a little bit. Let's talk about God. Let's talk about omniscience. Kind of in contrast, though, to what we just talked about with us. So where we said that we all, Jeremy and your smartest person and you, and we all start at zero. God has always known. He's always known. This is something. God does not learn. Because to learn is to change, and God is immutable. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about his immutability, which means he does not change. And why wouldn't he change? It's because you change when there's something to advance, right? When there's something to improve. If God is God and he got it all right the first time, he has no need for change. He doesn't change, or you could even say his character doesn't allow him to change. And it's so odd to say God can't do something, right? I mean, doesn't that kind of feel like, well, wait a minute, I don't want to put any bounds on God. God can do whatever God wants. Well, God's character, he cannot sin. God cannot have a flaw. God cannot improve because he already is. He already is what he is, which is remarkable in that. We're so, you know, we can be tempted to compare ourselves to God. And, you know, when we're searching for an answer that eludes us, God isn't. He's not searching for an answer on anything because he has it. He has that knowledge. As we learn lessons, as we learn new facts of life, God doesn't. He literally doesn't have a weakness. He's not learning. There's nothing for God to learn. You and I, we start at zero, and our life is we learn something every day. God is not learning. He's always known. The next point we talked about was we can never be a know-it-all, right? We just never learn it all. Well, God knows it all. It's the very definition of omniscience, is that God is all-knowing. He knows all things. He knows the past. All the gaps that we don't have answers for, he has those. The present day, God is with us. He's with those who love him. He's also with those who do not love him. Like, God is all-knowing. He's in this. He's in this in the highs. He's in this with us when we're in our lows. But God is all-knowing the future. God knows the future. 2,000 years ago, Jesus said, like, nobody knows except the Father when the end will come. Nobody knows except the Father. Only the Father could know. And that was a couple thousand years ago. God just knows it all. He is omniscient. It's not a mystery to him. We oftentimes learn wrong information. God is, quite simply, never wrong. He's never wrong. His knowledge is divine. Ours is like filtered through sinful humanity. I mean, come on. Like, even if you don't want to nod to this, like, in your spirit, like, can you acknowledge there have been times where you're like, God, I mean, I know you're God, but come on. I think it might be better if, you know, this were true instead of that. Or if you weren't so sure you wanted that to be law, but maybe this, because, you know. And it's like we have those moments where we might be tempted to think that we're right and God has it wrong. But this is the thing. Knowledge, truth, all of this proceeds from the Father. There's this line in the Gospel of John. It says, the Word, the Logos, the Word of God, right? The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And that Word was the, right, it's Jesus, and it's the voice of God, the Word of God that is the spoken Word became flesh. Jesus, right, came, and the Spirit of God proceeded from the Father and the Spirit and the Son. And in that way, knowledge is not God, and God is not knowledge. If God was knowledge and knowledge was God, that means the more we learn, the more we become God because we possess this great thing, right? You are not God, and knowledge is its own thing, but it proceeds from the Father. And so as we hover, as we draw near to God, we're drawing near to the very source of knowledge. So yeah, he's quite simply never wrong. Even the world wide web, like, it's can never catch him. It just can never catch him. Where we forget knowledge, God does not forget. He doesn't forget anything. He doesn't forget anyone. Sometimes we need reminded of that, that God never forgets you. He's never forgotten you. He's never forgotten what you're in. He's never had that aha moment where he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I was going to help this person out today. It's like God doesn't forget. His love for you is so strong, so certain. His heart is upon you. And finally, where we struggle to accept our limits, God has no limits. Our very first attribute we talked about in the series was God is infinite. It just means there are no limits. There's no constraints you can put on God. Where we don't really like to say, I don't know, God says, I know. When God met Moses in that burning bush, right? What did God say? Because Moses wants to know his name. And at the time, like, they believed all these gods had different names, and they were like the authority, their jurisdiction. I'm the god of the stars. I'm the god of this lake or this mountain, or Thor's the god of thunder. Like, right? I mean, they all have these, like, different, like, small identities. And what does God say? I am. I am who I am. Yahweh, right? I am. His knowledge, right? God has no limits, and there's no other way for him to describe himself than I am. The great I am. And I believe it's remarkably reassuring to worship a God who is all-knowing. In Isaiah, this is the turning point in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah is oftentimes called the fifth gospel because of chapter 40 on. The first 39 chapters are kind of written for Israel, like in their present day. And then starting at verse 40, Isaiah was given a vision. He was able to prophesy to the people in the future. Like, this would mean nothing to them in this moment, but in the future, this would be like the very words that the people would hang on, because they would actually get exiled. They would be conquered. Like, they didn't think it was impossible. They thought it was as improbable as most of you probably think it's improbable that somebody would come and literally conquer this country and put hooks in our noses and a chain through those so that they tie us all together and march us off 1,000 miles to Manitoba. Like, I mean, it was so improbable, but Isaiah was given that vision and he wrote for the future to encourage the people who would be taken away into exile. And so in the future, this writing would be read. And he says this. This is just two verses in Isaiah 40. He says, "Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel?" And that's actually a repetitive, which Jacob in, I don't know, Genesis 32-ish, the Jacob at the Jabbok, wherever that was, in Genesis, that's where Jacob was wrestling with God, and God gave him a new name and said, "Your name is not Jacob anymore, it's Israel," which means he wrestles. And so then the name Jacob is also the name Israel. Like, and that's why oftentimes in the Bible it'll be, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Like, it's because Jacob is Israel. And so anytime, especially in the Hebrew writings, like this Old Testament, anytime there's a repeated phrase, it's for remarkable emphasis. So this is a repeated phrase. "Why do you say this, O Jacob? And why do you speak, O Israel?" That's emphasizing, why are you guys saying this? And what they're saying is, "My way is hidden from the Lord. My right is disregarded by my God." And so God is saying, why would you say that your ways are hidden from me? Why are you say that your rights are violated, that I'm not around, I'm not helping? And the response is, "Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord," that's Yahweh, "is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable." His understanding is unsearchable. Anytime we find ourselves, it might be a moment of high, but it might be, and usually is, a moment of deep lows where we're just dejected and we're feeling isolated. And we're kind of questioning, is God, has he forgotten me? Does he know what's going on in my life? The answer is absolutely. Absolutely. God knows you. He knows the deepest desires of your heart. He knows the deepest fears that you might be pushing down because you don't want to work with them right now. He knows them, and he loves you, and he loves you through each of those. God's never caught off guard. He's never caught off guard. He's always prepared for every single challenge you're going through. Where Satan, who is our enemy, he is not omniscient. Only God is omniscient. Only God, like God is wiser. He's more experienced. He's smarter. He's more knowledgeable than Satan, than all others. And out of that, like a parent who loves us, we trust him. We trust our God who knows all things. Our God is omniscient. God, we thank you so much for your presence. We thank you for the knowledge you have, God, which isn't to show off. It's not even for your own sake of pride or some competition. God, your knowledge, it proceeds from you. It's the overflow of who you are. And God, we want today to just say this, that we're okay, that we're not omniscient. Humanity has done remarkable achievements. We've learned so much of the mysteries of this world, and we're not even close to you. And God, that's kind of the point of worship. Worship is saying, you are set apart, you are high, you are holy. We love you. We bless you in Jesus' name. Amen.